Alright, Jehovah said, good morning. Let's begin. We have a beautiful, beautiful daf ahead of us today. We are going to pick up with Ibai Lahu. It is two. Today's daf is Mem Zayin 47. We're picking up Mem Bava Mabez 46b. And we are picking up 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 lines up from the bottom. A lot to do today. Ibai Lahu. Hespeti Yikar de Chayehu, O Yikar de Shchivi. Avi. We'll say a hesped, a eulogy. Is a eulogy considered to be an act of honor for the living or for the dead? In other words, what's the goal of a eulogy? Is it to give kavod ultimately again to the family left behind? Or is it to give kavod to the deceased? So the ma'naf kamina. So, meaning, what does it matter? What does it matter? To which the Gemara says, "Da'amar lo tispidu halahu gavra." Right? Let's say again, the deceased left in his will, no eulogies. No eulogies. So we'll say, if it's a din in his own kavod, so he has the right to go ahead and yield to be mevater on his own kavod. But if it's for the kavod of the living, then the deceased does not have the right to go ahead and request that they forego that kavod. Inami, mostly the other possibility is, lafuki meyorshin. Let's say, well, this is very interesting. Let's say again, they want to bring in someone to give a hesped. I guess like a hesped scholar in residence. You know, he's an excellent speaker. They want to bring him in. He knew this, but there are travel expenses associated with it. Do the Yarshim have an obligation to pick up the expenses for the eulogizer? So we'll say again, if you say that it's a din ultimately in the covet of the deceased, then the Yarshim would have an obligation to go ahead and pay for those expenses. But if on the other hand it's a din in Yakar Dechai, that ultimately the covet given to the living, then Halacha Lamaisa, again, they could choose to forego that. So Tashma, so the Gemara says, Vayavav Avraham as well as Rav Liv Kosa. Pasuk says, Avraham Avinu came, beginning of Parashas Chayei Sarah, to eulogize Sarah, and to cry for her. So the Gemara says, V'i Amrit Mishim Yikar Dechayi. If you want to say that eulogies are honors to the living, Mishum Yikra Davra Mashuluhu L'Sara, because of the honor to Avraham Avinu, would they leave Sarah unburied? Now, what the Gemara is assuming over here is the following. Avraham Avinu, like Rashi points out, was not in Hebron when Sarah Imenu died. He was not present. So therefore, again, the idea over here is, they waited for Avram to get back in order to bury Sarah. The Pashas wanted to bury her in order to go ahead and eulogize her. So if you tell me they left her unburied overnight because Avram Avinu's eulogy was a kavod for Sarah, then I understand why they would have left her unburied overnight. But if you want to tell me that the eulogy is a kavod for the living, it'll be a kavod for Avram Avinu. So because of the kavod to Avram Avinu, we're going to leave Sarah Avinu unburied overnight. To which the Gemara says, Sarah, Gufa nechala kechi dimyakir b'Avram. For Sarah Imenu, it was a great covet for her that more honor should come to her husband. The idea being that Avraham Avinu should be able to get additional covet through being able to eulogize was in and of itself a covet for Sarah Imenu. Tashma, v'saptu lo kol Yisrael v'kavru osam. So we'll say the pasuk says, and all of Kol Yisrael will eulogize him, and they will perish. So we'll say this is what we learned yesterday. This is by Aviah, the son of Yeravam ben Nevat. The Navi ultimately saying that even though the family of Yeravam ben Nevat was going to be totally wiped out, because this son Aviah was a tzaddik, therefore he would receive a proper burial. To which the Gemara says, "Amrit Yikar Dechayehu." And if you want to say that eulogizing the dead is an honor for the living, Hanach b'nei Yigrininu, should these relatives of Aviah receive any kind of kavod? To which the Gemara says, "Nechalu l'tzadika." It is a beneficial to tzaddikim, ultimately again, that his mishpacha, even if they're not tzaddikim, should have some covet through him. Tashma, lo yispadu v'lo yikbaru. So we'll say this time out again, the people of Anatot, right, the Navi Yirmiyahu says they worship Avodah Zarah, therefore they will not be eulogized, they will not be buried. So the Gemara says, lo nechalei l'tzaddikei d'miyakri b'rishayo. So ultimately again, why won't they be eulogized? Because tzaddikim do not want to be uplifted through the memory of the Rishayim. Tashma, b'shalom tamus, u'b'misrafos avasecha ha-malachim ha-rishonim ha-shahayu lefanecha, ken yisrafu lach, v'havi adon yisbedu lach. So we'll say, this is the Navi, if you look at Rashi, last Rashi on the page, v'havi adon yisbedu lach l'tzidkiyo ne'amar. So we'll say, this is Yirmiyahu ha-Navi speaking to the king Tzidkiyo. Tzidkiyo is about to be conquered. Is about to be conquered and about to be exiled. The Navi gives him the Chama by telling him, you are going to die a normal death. Right? In other words, you're not going to be killed now in this invasion. You're going to die a normal death. You'll be eulogized. It also speaks out, interestingly enough, the burning of his possessions. It used to be even Jewish practice that they would burn the king's possessions after his death. Like his personal effects. That was considered to be an act of kavod, that no one else should go ahead and use the king's possessions. An interesting discussion. We're going to see it in Avodah Zarah. It comes up. Actually, we're going to see actually in Sanhedrin also. It comes up because it's an interesting discussion. Als bal tashlis, unnecessary waste. So again, we'll see. It's a point over here is that the Navi's telling Tzidkio, you're going to be eulogized when you die. To which the Gemara says, if you want to say that eulogizing is covered, given to the living, so then what does Sidkio care if he's going to be eulogized or he's going to be dead? This is what he means to say. Klal Yisrael will be uplifted for you, or I should say, through you, the same way that what? The same way that you were lifted, the same way that you are uplifted ultimately through your forefathers. We'll say Taf of Mem Zayin. Tashma, Nivza Be'enav Nim'as. Literally, again, he who is degraded in his own eyes. Zehu Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Zehu Chizkiyahu HaMelech Yehuda. Zehu Chizkiyahu HaMelech Yehuda. Shegirer Atzamos Aviv Al Mita Shel Chavolim. We'll say this refers to Chizkiyahu who degraded himself. How did he degrade himself? He went ahead and he took his father's bones and he dragged them through the street. Now his father was an incredible Oved Avodah Zarah. Chizkio, in an effort to repudiate his father's idolatry, publicly dishonors his father's remains. But of course, but through this repudiation of idolatry, he's also what? He's slighting his own covet. He's sliding his own covet. So the Gemara says, "V'imishu mikar dechayihu, my time." So we'll say now, what the Gemara says is the following: if you understand that eulogizing, ultimately again, is a form of honor to the living, then we would assume ultimately again that this dishonor is also a form of dishonor to the living. To which the Gemara says, "My time is." So why would Chizkio do it? Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Amita shel chavalim derech bizayim b'meishaya aviv rasha ubize le'inei kol kedei sheyisrasu achirim ulekavod atzmo lo chash umepnei kavod av nami lekel meichash. Fine. So let's finish the Gemara. Umishum, the Gemara says that they have kapar la'avua. Chizkio did this, Rabbi Osai, not only as a repudiation of idolatry, but as a form of kapara for his father. He felt that this humiliation to his father's remains would in and of itself be a kapara to his father. To which the Gemara says, Mishum kapara davua mashvu le'ikar di'isra. But I don't understand. But it's not just a degradation to his father. It's a degradation to Klal Yisrael. Because his father was a melech also. By dishonoring the king, you are dishonoring the nation. To which the Gemara says, Yisrael gufayu nechaluhu demechli yikarei legabe. For Klal Yisrael, this was a good thing also. Klal Yisrael was willing to forego ultimately again their covet, if first of all it could affect the kapara for their now deceased king, and ultimately again if it could serve Klal Yisrael's interest through a repudiation of idolatry. So we'll say, we're still focused on one basic question, which is, what's the nature of a eulogy? Is a eulogy given as a form of honor to the deceased, or is a eulogy given as a form of honor to the living? We're trying to figure out which one exactly this is. So Tashma, Amar Lahen, Al Tispeduni Ba'ayaros. Well, so this is actually amazing. So this Gemara Maseches Ksuvos that we learned before, this was Rabbeinu HaKadosh, as Rashi points out. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi said, before he died, that when you eulogize me, only eulogize me in large cities. Look at Rashi. Al Tispeduni Ba'ayaros. Rabbeinu HaKadosh Siva as Banav Beksuvis. Banose, atispeduni kishotolichu es aroni lamokom kvurasi, dumeis bitzipori, vikovraso bebeis sharim. Atispeduni bayaros kitanos, shetavru alein el bikrachim gidolim diika an shituva. So let's listen to this. Rebbe instructed his children that ultimately, again, when he died in Sipori, but he was going to be buried in Beis Sharim, which means his remains were going to be transferred. So they would eulogize him at different stops. Rebbe said, only eulogize me in large cities where there will be large assemblies of people. If you want to say ultimately, again, that a eulogy is an honor for the living. What does it matter if the eulogy is given in a small city or a large city? Rebbe thought that through his eulogies, Klal Yisrael ultimately again will receive more honor. In other words, that through his eulogies, so his dedication to Klal Yisrael, his love of Klal Yisrael, the singularity of Klal Yisrael will come out, and therefore his eulogies will be a form ultimately again of kavod for Klal Yisrael. Because it will be a form of a platform for kavod for Klal Yisrael, he instructed that it only be done in larger cities. Tashma, helinu lichvodo, supposed to listen to this. Let's say they left a person unburied overnight. For what purpose? For his own kavod, for the kavod of the mace. Lahavilo aron v'tachrichin, for example, because they needed to bring a casket or shrouds, eino over alav. So we'll say there is no prohibition of bal tolin, of leaving the body unburied. If the body is left unburied, alts kavod ha'mace. Umushum, which the Gemara says, my love lichvodo shomis, when we say helinu lichvodo, that they left him buried, they left him unburied overnight, lichvodo, for his honor. Isn't the honor that we refer to the honor of the mace? Sisya both said that everything we do in the burial process, what the Gemara is driving at is, including eulogies, is done for the kavod mace. To which the Gemara says, no, my love kvodo shal mace, lo, lechvodo shal chai. No, maybe it means that you could leave a person unburied even for the kavod of the living. In other words, if there's some aspect that if there's some greater kavod for the living relatives, to delay the levaya, we allow you to do that. So we see that when it comes to details surrounding the death, whether it's the timing of the burial or for that matter the eulogies, it's a din in kavod achai. It's a din ultimately again in the kavod given to the surviving relatives. You're going to tell me because of the honor due to the living, we're going to leave the dead unburied overnight? And yes, we will. Because after when the pasuk says lo salin nivlasa ala eats, when the pasuk says do not leave the body hanging overnight, dumya de taloi de ispe bizayon. Avalhacha de less baby zayon lo. So we'll say at the end of the day, what the Gemara is saying over here is the following, that the prohibition of halonas hames, of leaving a dead person unburied overnight, is when there will be a compromise to the dignity of the deceased, like you leave him hanging on a tree. But in a situation where there's not a compromising of the dignity of the deceased, so the prohibition of bal talin, the Gemara is suggesting, will not apply. Now again, we'll say the caveat to that is we don't unnecessarily leave a person unburied overnight. What the Gemara is just saying is if there is a compelling reason out the living to leave the dead unburied overnight, and the dead is not in a compromised or degrading situation, we will allow you to do that. Tashma, helinu lichvodo, l'shama alav, alai ayaros. Suppose if they left the dead person unburied overnight, lichvodo, for his honor. So for example, to get the news out about the death in the cities, lahavilo mikoninos, to bring wailers. They will say, now what does that mean, wailers? They used to have like professional criers who came to a levaya, lahavilo aron vitachrichin, to go ahead and bring a casket. Excuse me. Thank you. To bring a casket, to bring shrouds, eino over alov, shakala osa, eino ela lichvodo shalmes. Because they will say everything that's being done ultimately again is being done lekavod hames. So we'll say, what do you see from here? You see that the details surrounding a levaya are a din in kavod hames. To which the Gemara says, no, hachi kamer, kala osa lichvodo shal chai, ein lo bizayon lames. Whenever you do something ultimately again for the honor of the living, just know that there is no bizayon hames in that. Tashma, Rabbi Nassan says, simin yafa lames, shenefra'en mimeno la'achar misa. Well, so this is actually amazing. The Gemara says it is a good simon for the person who died. If retribution is extracted from him after his death. Also, what does this mean? It's a good simon for the dead person if some lack of kavod is given to him after his death. For example, the Gemara says, mace shelo nispad. For example, if for some reason eulogies weren't delivered, velo nikbar, or he wasn't buried. They both say, now what the Rishonim point out over here is what this means is he wasn't buried immediately. O shechaya gorarasso, or a wild animal dragged his body. O shaya gisham misalf al amitaso, or it was raining on the day of the levaya. Zeus simin yafa lames. Ultimately, again, this is a good siman. I will say, what does that mean? What that means is, if the levaya is imperfect, right? Meaning, and there's some circumstance that takes away a little bit from the kavod given to the mace, it's a kapara. It's a kapara. That's exactly. It's a kapara, and it's beneficial for the mace to have that kapara visited upon its guf, right? Its lifeless guf here in this world, than to have that kapara visited upon its neshama in shamayim. So Moshe says, "What do you see from here? Shmamina yikra d'shachvihu." We'll say, but one thing that comes out, Moshe, what do you see from here? If for some reason a eulogy was not delivered, so you see ultimately again that is considered to be a kapara for the mace. Therefore, what do you see from here? That eulogies are a form of honor accorded to the mace. Shmamina yikra d'shachvihu shmamina. So we'll say, indeed, we see halacha l'maisa that the way we look at eulogies is eulogies are a form of respect, a form of kavod to the deceased. And that is how the Gemara ends off halacha l'maisa. Now again, of course, one can make the argument that eulogies do both things, right? They give kavod to the deceased and they also give kavod to the living. That's absolutely true. But again, we saw in the Gemara that there are certain nafkaminas. From a halachic perspective, the way we understand eulogy is a form of kavod ames, a form of honor given to the dead. The Gemara goes like, "Lahayu kavod." So also remember again, the Mishnah said that after they executed the individual and they hung the body. So remember, again, the Gemara said they buried them in a special special cemetery. Right? They were not buried in ancestral plots. They had two different cemeteries. And if you remember, again, the Mishnah said the two different cemeteries, one was for those killed with hereg and chenek, right, through a sword and through strangulation, and the other was one for those who were killed through skila and sreifa, through stoning and burning. So says the Gemara, v'chol kach lama, I don't understand, why do you have to have a special cemetery? Why can't you just bury the deceased in their family plot? To which the Gemara says, l'fi shein kovrin rasha etzel tzadik, because we do not bury wicked people next to righteous people. D'amar av achar b'achanina, minayin shein kovrin rasha etzel tzadik, how do we know that we don't bury rishoyim next to tzadikim? Shene'emar, v'hi heim kovrim ish, v'neiro es ha'gidud, v'yashlichu es ha'ish b'kever elisha. So we'll say, the Navi tells an incredible story. The Navi tells a story about a group of individuals who are burying a guy. Just some guy. Right? Well, we'll see, he wasn't such a good guy. And what happens? As they're in the midst of burying the individual, they are attacked by a Gentile army, by some group of marauding troops. So what do? They threw the body into the nearest burial cave. It just happened to be that it was the burial cave of the Navi Elisha. What happened? Vayiga ha'ish ba'atzmos Elisha. So the body of this guy touched the bones of Elisha. Vayichi, he came back to life. Vayakam al raglov, he stood up on his feet. So the Gemara says, so what was the point of this? I will say the idea, and Rashi points this out, the idea was that this individual was an unrighteous man, and therefore, again, he could not be buried next to Elisha. So he comes back to life, he walks out of the burial cave, and he dies again. So says the Gemara, Amar li Rav Papa, V'dilma lekiyume vehina pishnai beruchacha elai. But maybe this was a kiyum, ultimately, again, of Elisha's request. I will say, right before Elisha's Rebbe, Eliyahu, dies, Eliyahu says to Elisha, you know, remember, Eliyahu HaNavi doesn't die. Eliyahu HaNavi ascends to Shemayim in a fiery chariot. And Eliyahu says to Elisha, here's the deal. If you go ahead and you see me ascend, that means that you have reached an elevated spiritual level. If you reach that level, I hereby grant you whatever brachas you want. So one of the interesting brachas that Elisha asked for was a pishnayim beruchacha elai. That give me double your ruach, give me double your spirit. So there are many interpretations of that, but one of them is Eliyahu HaNavi brought one person back to life. Elisha was asking for pishnayim, let me bring two people back to life. So you know, of course, that Elisha brought one person back to life. He brought the young boy back to life, who again, right, the son of the Isha Tsarfatit, who remember again, we know was who? Was Yonah, right? And now, again, the Gemara suggests maybe the fact that this man came back to life, this was the Pishnayim. Maybe this was, again, the second time he brought someone back to life, to which the Gemara says, Amar Leih, if that's the case, Ihach Yehainu Desanyo, Al Raglav Amad, Ula beisalo halach. So I say, here's the issue. The issue is, if that's the case, then the guy should have totally come back to life. But he doesn't come back totally. What happens? He comes back to life enough to what? Enough to walk out of the burial cave. But like the Nabi said, he went back home. Right? He didn't go back home. Meaning, so what it appears is he came back to life, walked out of the burial cave, but then he died again. If this was really the Pishnayim, then what? Then Lamais again, he should have come back to life altogether. If that's the case, so the Gemara says, Ela ve'in la'pishnayim heichim mishkachasla. So ultimately, again, So where did Elisha have his pishnayim of bringing someone back to life? He healed the tzara'as of Naaman. Remember again, Naaman was the general of the army of Aram, who ironically enough comes to the Jewish prophet to help him get healed from his tzara'as. And what happens? Elisha heals him. The person who has tzara'as is choshev kemes, is like he's dead. So therefore the fact that he healed someone with tzara'as is like a form of bringing someone back to life. So says the Gemara, Dechsev al nati kemes. And above, say, going back to what we said before, the same way that you can't bury a Russia next to a tzaddik. So we'll say we are on Mem Zayin Amud Beis in the fourth wide line. Kach in Kovin Russia Chamar Eitzel Russia Kal. We'll say so too again. The same way we don't bury a Russia next to a tzaddik, we also don't bury a really bad Russia next to a not-so-bad Russia. Also, what does that mean? Meaning there are different gradations of Rishayim. So someone ultimately, again, who was an extreme Russia is not buried next to someone who was a lesser Russia. So the Gemara says, so we'll say, the logic behind that, what the Gemara is pointing out over here is the following. This is why we have two different cemeteries. We have one cemetery for Hereg and Chenek, for death by sword and strangulation. One for Skila and Srefa. Skila and Srefa are considered to be more severe forms of death that are given to more severe transgressions. Versus Hereg and Chenek, which are also obviously, I mean, all death is severe, but they are considered to be lesser punishments. Therefore, we don't bury them next to each other. To which the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, Veliskan Arba Kvaros, Shnik, to which the Gemara says, why don't you set up four cemeteries? Why don't you set up one cemetery per Misas Bezdin? To which the Gemara says, Shnik Kvaros Gemara Gemirila. Our tradition is, meaning the Mesorah has been two cemeteries. Okay? Amar Ulam Rabbi Yochanan, Achal Chela V'Hefresh Karban V'Himer Daito. Supposed to listen to this. Let's say a person went ahead and accidentally ate forbidden fat, accidentally ate chalif, and then what happens? He separated out his karban, v'hemer daito, then he became an apikoris. So we'll say, so the case over here is, Reuven ate chalif accidentally, therefore he's liable to bring a karban. He separated the karban, he then became an apikoris, and now he's chozer b'tshuva, v'chozer bo. So we'll say, what's the shayla? The shayla is, can he offer up that karban? Can he offer up that karban? To which the Gemara says, no. So also Rabbi Yochanan says, since the carbon has been set aside, it's set aside. Now the underpinning of this halacha, as Rashi points out, is we do not accept carbonos from apikarsin. We don't accept the carbon from an apikoris. Therefore, what Rabbi Yochanan is suggesting, Abosai, is the following. Once the guy becomes an apikoris, therefore what? His carbon is not accepted. And once his carbon is not accepted, it can't be accepted, You can't reinstate the effectiveness of that carbon. See, even once he becomes a Baal Tshuva, that's fine, but once that carbon was set aside for non-offering, it cannot be reinstated. Hoil v'nitcha yitcha. Itmar na'am Rebosu, we have a price that supports this. Am Rabbi Yochanan, achol chaylev v'hifrish carbon. Listen to this case. A person ate chaylev, forbidden fat, and they have to offer a carbon, they set aside the carbon. Then what happens? Vinishtata. The person became insane. Now, both saying, a shota can't offer a carbon either. You have to have das. So in this case, again, a person came to us where he didn't have das. V'chazra vinishtaf, and then Baruch Hashem, he's healed. What's the halacha? Hoil v'nitcha yitcha. Rabbi say, since the carbon was in a state where it could not be offered, what Rabbi Yochanan essentially is teaching us is hoil v'nitcha yitcha, which means that once a carbon could not be offered, even if the circumstances changed back to what they were before, the carbon still can't be offered. To which the Gemara says, why do I need both cases? Zricha, v'yashmina kamaisa. If we had just told me the apikoris case, I would have said it can't be offered. Why? Mishum de'ihu dacha nafshe biyadayim. Because he is responsible for the change in his circumstance. So because he is responsible for the change of his circumstance, he did it himself. Therefore, again, he caused this situation, and therefore the carbon cannot be reinstated, even once he is chozer b'tshuva. But I would have said the guy who becomes a shota, the guy who goes insane, so he didn't do this to himself. Maybe he should be like a person who's sleeping. Just like a person has a period every single night where he doesn't have das, but yet ultimately, again, his karbon is still effective the next morning. Maybe when someone becomes a shota, that's like a prolonged period of sleep. And therefore, when he quote-unquote wakes up, the carbon should once again be good. Kamashmon, that's not the case. V'yashmoninon, halcham yishom de'im b'yad al-achzar. We'll say, and if we're just talking by the shota case, I would have said, hoil v'nidche yitche, because he doesn't control his ability to return to a normative state. Aval hasum de'b'yad al-achzar, imalo. But I might have thought that in that case, meaning in the case of the apikores, because he has the ability to return to b'chozer b'tshuva whenever he wants, imalo, I would have thought that therefore his karbon does not forever become yitcha, does not become set aside, therefore against yitcha. Therefore, was I need both cases. In other words, so what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that the principle of Rabbi Yochanan will apply in both of these cases. Rabbi saying this indeed is halacha lemaisa, that whenever a person has a change in status, and as a result of that change in status, in the current status, right, original status, he could offer the carbon. Then status changes. In this changed status, he cannot offer the carbon, either because he changed his status or the status was changed. Even if the status reverts back to what it once was, to mirror what it was when he separated the carbon can no longer be offered. Once a carbon transitions to a state where it is unable to be offered, it cannot retransition back to its previous state. That's hoil v'nidcha yitcha. Amar Rav Yosef, afanana mitanina, hayuba kachim, kachim is be'ach yamosu. Supposed to say, this is about ir nidachas. In a year nidachas, you have to destroy everything within the city, right? And therefore again, what do you do if there were kachim? Kachim is be'achyamos, you let them die. Kachim edekabayis, if there are things that were sanctified for ultimately, again, the benefit of the Beis HaMikdash, then what? Yipdu, to ultimately, again, they are redeemed. You redeem them for their value. Vavinan ba, amaya musu, why don't you go ahead, and why do you have to let the kachim is be'ach, why do you have to let them die? Kevan di'ikto, havilu kapara, svilisgula gavar. Both say, we assume that death atones. Once they kill these individuals, they should be tzaddikim. If that's the case, we could offer up the karbanos. It must be because that since they were Shavod Zara, they effectively became apikarsim. Once they became apikarsim, the karban was set aside for non-use. And once it's set aside for non-use, you cannot go ahead. It does not revert back to its previous state. The Gemara just opened the door to an interesting discussion, which is the ability for death to atone. The ability for death to atone. To which the Gemara Abaye says, who says that when you die in a state of rishos, in a state of evil, that your death atones for you? So the Gemara says, so I could argue that when you die in a state of being a rasha, it doesn't give you a kapara. The Tanya of Shemayo, Yochala filu pershu avosav midarchitzi boryitama. I might have thought that if the Kohen has parents who left the Derech, if the Kohen has parents who have become apikarsim, maybe he should become Tameh for them. Tamu lomar ba'amav. Therefore, again, the Pasuk says, who does the Kohen become Tameh for? Only for relatives that are ba'amav in his nation. Ba'ose ma'isa amav. Only when his relatives are conduct themselves as Jews. But if they totally leave the fold, then halach lamais again, the coin does not become tummy for them. Amar le Rava, so we'll say, so why doesn't that make sense? Because if you see that Misa is mechaper, so then what? When, let's say, the coin's father dies, even if his father was a mamash napikores, then what? Once he dies, what should happen? Death is a kapara. If death is a kapara, the father effectively becomes a tzaddik. If he's a tzaddik, then the son, the Kohen, should be able to be mitami himself for him. To which the Gemara says, "Amar le Rava, mi kama damas nerag mitoch risho, lemeis mitoch risho." You're comparing apples and oranges. You can't compare someone who is executed by Beis Din versus someone who dies on their own. Meis mitoch risho, kevan da arche kaimus, Lo havile kapara. We'll say if a person dies of natural causes and he dies while being a rush, or else he never did tshuva, then his death does not atone for him. Nerak mitoch risho, kevan delav orchei mayis havile kapara. We'll say when a person is executed because of his rishos, because this is a non-normative death, therefore that act of execution ultimately atones for him. Teda dichsiv. After all, what do we say? Mizmor li asaf elokim bo ganim benachal asecha. Timu asecha lecha. Nosnu es nivlas avadecha lemachal of hashamayim. Besar chasidecha lechay saaretz. So the pasuk in Navi discusses the idea that you have given over the nivlas, the corpses of your servants, for food to the birds of the heaven, and the flesh of your chasidim to the animals of the earth. My avodecha, my chasidecha. What's the difference between these two individuals, an Evan and a chasid? Lav chasidecha, chasidecha mamish. Chasidecha refers to people who are truly pious. Avodecha, hanach de mechai v'dina, de me'ikara, v'cheban de ikdol karlu avodecha. Who are avodecha? These are individuals who really were rishayim. They were rishayim, and they deserve to die. But because they were killed ultimately again by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kari le avodecha, ultimately, again, their death atones, and therefore what? They are called avadecha. Amar le Abayis. Abayis is one second. Mi kam adamis. How can you compare? Amar beis. Haruge malchus la haruge beis. Suppose the pasuk over here in Navi, Mizmor li asaf elokim bo goyim benachal asecha, is talking about Jews killed by Gentiles, what we call haruge malchus. How can you compare those killed by a Gentile government to those killed by Beis Din? The Gemara says, "Harugi Malchus Kevon D'Shelo B'Din Kamikdali Havili Kapara." See, both say those who are killed by Gentile government. The Gemara literally says, because they're not killed B'Din, they're not killed justly, so ultimately their death is a kapara. Both say another way of explaining this is anyone who's killed by a non-Jew for the mere fact that what, that they're a Jew, that is a death al kiddush Hashem. And that death al kiddush Hashem is irrespective of their own personal spiritual status. In other words, a person could be a Rasha Gomer, but if they're killed because they're a Jew, that's a death al kiddush Hashem. Death al kiddush Hashem is automatically mechaper. It's automatically mechaper. Even if the person did not do tshuva at all, even if a person mamish was a Rasha Merusha, an Apikores Gomer, dying because you're a Jew is a death al kiddush Hashem, is mechaper. On the other hand, Haruge Beis Din, Kevan Dibedin Kamikdali, Lo Havilu Kapara. But both say if a person is executed by Beis Din for their crimes, that is a just execution. A just execution does not automatically provide Kapara, unless, of course, what? The person does tshuva before. And both say, remember again, that's our Mishnah. That's why we saw before that what are they doing as they take the person towards the Beis Haskila. What do they tell him? Do tshuva. To which the Gemara says, to which Teda, this time the Hayu covered also became a Savosa. Because we'll say, after all, the proof to this is that after they executed a person, they did not bury him in a family plot. But if you want to say that death is an automatic atonement, then what shall I say? After the Basin executes the individual, where should they bury him? They should bury him in his family plot. Rather, what do you see? Misa ukvura ba'inam. And then Rabbi say, what you see is that in order to effect full atonement, you need death and burial. Rabbi say, we already began to see this yesterday, that burial itself begins to affect, also has a kapara-like quality. Either it's because that sometimes a person's greatest sin is gaiva, a person lifts themselves up, and burial is the act of being taken down, lowered down. Bless you. So that in and of itself is a kapara. There's also something called sar chibut hakever. And we'll discuss this today a little bit going into tomorrow's daf, which is there is pain associated with being in the kever. Now again, it's not a physical pain because when a person is dead, they don't experience physical pain. It's some type of pain that the neshama experiences by seeing the decomposition of the body or the degradation of the body. That pain is in and of itself a kapara. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that lemaisa, again, the kapara for the person who is executed is a two-pronged kapara. The first part of it is death, but the other part of it is kvura. So because death does not affect full kapara, therefore what? The person who is executed cannot be buried in a family plot, has to be first buried in the cemetery of Beis Din. So what did the Mishnah say? When someone is someone executed by Beis Din, the family does not observe Avelos in the formal sense. There's aninos, they mourn in their heart, there's sadness, but there's no formal avelos. But 1 second. If you want to say that as soon as the person is buried, burial affects kapara, then what? They should be able to observe Shiva. Because we'll say again, remember, again, let them bury the individual, let the family observe Shiva. No. When we say that burial affects atonement, we'll say, not just the act of placing the body in the ground, it's the beginning of the decomposition of the body as well. We need the beginning of decomposition to occur. That's the atonement. Dekanami diktani nis'achel ha'basar melakten es'atamos ve'kovrin oso bim'koman. Because what did the Mishnah say? We bury the person in the cemetery of Beis Din. Then once the body decomposes, the family collects the bones and reburies the bones in a family plot. So you see from here, Rabosai, death is the first part of the burial. You see the first part of the atonement. And then burial with the decomposition of the body is the second part of the atonement. Rav Ashi Amar, Avelos, there's another reason why they can't observe Avelos. Avelos me'emasai kamaschalas. Rabosai, when does Shiva begin? When does Avelos begin? Mistimas hagolel. As soon as, we remember this from our Moed Katan days, as soon as the grave is filled in. Once the grave is filled in, technically speaking, Shiva begins then. Kapara me'emasai kahavyo. But ultimately, again, when does Kapara begin? Only michichazut tsar de kivra porta. Only when the neshama begins to have what we call tsar de kivra. What's called tsar chibot hakever. And ultimately, again, tsar chibot hakever, this pain of burial only begins when, Rabosai, when the body begins to decompose. So therefore, again, you see, kapara really only kicks in later. Therefore, we can't observe shiva now. Hilchach, hoil v'itchu yitchu. So we'll say, why not go ahead and begin to observe shiva, right, at some later time? Let's say, I don't know at what point in time decomposition begins. Let's say it's a week. So observe shiva a week later. So you see, no, once you can't observe shiva at its appropriate time, then what? Hoil v'itchu yitchu. Once it's set aside, it's set aside. Ihachi, namali icho basar. So if that's the case, says the Gemara, what the Gemara is suggesting, I will say over here, is the following. Is that halacha lemaisa, what you're telling me now is, we don't really need the full body to decompose in order for kapara to be effective. Rather, you only need decomposition to begin. If that's the case, why does the Mishnah say you have to wait for the body? So the way the Mishnah reads, I will say, is we bury the person in the cemetery of Beis Din, we wait for the body to fully decompose, we collect the bones, and then rebury them. But what you're saying over here now is, all you need is for decomposition to begin in order for kapara to be complete. If that's the case, wait for decomposition to begin, and then what? Unbury the body, right? Exhume the body, and rebury it in the family burial plot. Then why do you have to wait for full decomposition? To which the Gemara says, Mishum Dula Afshar. Because I will say, you can't. In other words, the Gemara says, you can't take a body that is in this process of decomposition and rebury it. It's going to be a very, very, very difficult and unpleasant situation. And there are a couple of problems. Number one, because it's just an unpleasant situation. Number two, I will say, because when the body is in the process of decomposition, it's also hard to know that you're getting all of the different parts of the body in the process of reburial. Therefore, again, even though on a technical level, because kapara has been affected once decomposition begins, you could technically exhume the body and rebury it in the family plot, but because logistically it's impossible and really a bizayon to the mace, we wait until full decomposition is complete, collect the bones, rebury them. To which the Gemara should also listen to this. The Gemara is now going to transition into a discussion about general Isser Hanah by graves. So Kabri Dirav Havushakli Mini Afra Lashisa Basyama. So also listen to this. So apparently one of the Talmudic remedies was for a day old fever, you take earth and you mix it with some kind of concoction. People used to take earth from the grave of Rav. From the grave of Rav. We'll say whether that was because they thought that the earth of his grave had better qualities, or just because it was right there, or because the earth itself was soft, whatever the metzias was, they would take grave from, I want to be clear, they weren't taking up his grave. What it means is they were taking soil from the top of his grave to go out and make in this concoction to take care of a fever. To which the Gemara says, so what happens? What happens? Amrulei l'Shmuel. So they came. So people came to Shmuel and they complained about this process, about this thing. They said, "How could it be that they're disrespecting Rav's grave like this?" Amrulehu yes avdina. Shmuel said, "The truth is, there's no problem. There's no problem. Why? Karka olamu. Because they both say this is karka. It's earth. The karka olam inon esaris. And they both say earth can never become aser bana. In other words, people were complaining because they thought that as a grave, it should be aser bana." It should be prohibited from use. To which Shmuel said, "No, it's karka, it's earth, and earth itself could never become aser bana." Tichsiv, how do we know this? Vayashlech es afra al kever b'nei ha'am. Mostly because the pasuk says in Malachim Beis that the navi took the Asherah tree, he ground it up, and he sprinkled it on the graves of the avodah zara. Makish kever b'nei ha'am la avodas kochav. Say, the Navi compares a kever of the people to Avodah Zarah. What's the comparison? Ma'avodas kochavim me'mechuber la'misira. It's actually very interesting. Something that is mechuber la'karka cannot become aser as Avodah Zarah. How do we know this? Tichsiv, asher atem yorshim osam es Eloheim ala harim haramim. The Navi talks about the Klal Yisrael, the land that you're going to inherit, and the gods, referring to Avodah Zarah, al haharim, on the high mountains, al haharim Eloheihem, velo haharim Eloheihem. Destroy the gods that sit on the mountains, but you do not have to destroy the mountains that they make gods. Now, as we both say, if somebody comes along and goes ahead and says, that mountain is a god, that mountain is a god, and they make the mountain Avodah Zarah, both say it doesn't work. Otherwise, you'd be in big trouble. Right? If somebody, can you imagine someone, Obed Avodah Zarah could come and say, that mountain is my god. And they make that Avodah Zarah. Can you imagine the tzaras that causes everyone else? So that look is, you can't make something that is mechubra lekarka into an Avodah Zarah. I'll say the exception to this is an Asherah tree. Right? That's the exception to this rule. But otherwise, what it really means is, you can't make a part of the topography, right? You can't make a part of the topography. You can't make karka into Avodah Zarah. Hachnaiber mechuber lo miser. So the Rebbe says this. The Navi compares Avodah Zarah to graves. The same way, ultimately, again, that you can't make something that's mechuber the karka Avodah Zarah. So this something that's mechuber the karka ultimately again does not become asra al a grave. May say, is that true? So we'll say, therefore, the Gemara is suggesting over here that if I want to come and take earth from a grave for my own personal mundane purposes, that I am ultimately permitted to do so. May say, the Gemara is the Kasha, HaChotzeif kever la'aviv v'halach v'karva b'mokam acher. If ultimately, again, a person goes in and digs a grave for his father, and then Rabbi says, so Reuven digs a grave for his father, but then he decides to bury his father elsewhere. So there's this open kever that was supposed to be for his father, but he buried his father elsewhere. Harei zeh lo yikaver ba'olamis. You can, so he, the son, can't use that grave. So we'll say, so what do you see from here? You see that a grave is asur bana. That once a grave was set aside for someone, you can't use it for something else. So the Gemara says, no. How come I ask you? What's the case here, Rabbi Osai? Bekever binyan. Rabbi Osai, the case over here is where he built a structure for his father. So he built a structure in which to bury his father. Oh, so a binyan, a structure, can become asur bana. Say, Nechinami, if the son created this binyan for his father, the son can't use it for himself. Tashma. So we'll say, if you go ahead and you dug a grave, but you did not assign that grave to someone, it is mutar bana. We'll say mutar bana means you can use it for whatever you want. You want to entertain there, you want to sleep there, you want to, you know, have overnights there. You can do whatever you want. That is yours to use. Hitl ba nefel, but the moment you bury someone in there, we'll say, now, the Gemara uses the example of a nefel is a miscarriage, which means even a not a quote-unquote full person, right? Even, but once you use it as a burial plot, asr ba no. Ultimately, again, so we'll say, what do you see from here? You see that graves are asr ba no? To which the Gemara says, hakanami bekever binyan. So to be, what are we talking about? So we'll say, we're talking about a structure. We're talking about a structure. So we'll say, we'll stop over here for today. We might record a little bit later on. I want to share with you an idea from the parasha. But again, just to understand what we emerged with today. Number one, we emerged that a eulogy is considered to be yikra d'shchivi. A eulogy itself is considered to be a form of kavod ames. Now we're in the midst of a dramatic, riveting conversation. Oh, number two, we also learned that when you are killed, ultimately, again, by Gentile government or Gentile army, that's automatic din of death. Death al kiddush Hashem, automatic kapara. What we're in the midst of trying to figure out is other circumstances. Now, when somebody's executed by Beis Din, when there's so death is part of their kapara. Beginning of decomposition is the second part of their kapara. Even though we could technically move the body after the beginning of decomposition, we don't because of logistical considerations. Now we're in the midst of trying to figure out, ultimately again, is a kever aser bahana or not? So Amir Tashem will resolve that in Shabbos. Let me just share with you a short idea on the parsha.